is 7 o'clock, so we'll call the meeting in order. And we have a call, thank you all. Citizens' comments, I don't think there was any, when I came in, there wasn't.
There was none.
Approval of the January 7th minutes.
I shall move.
Second?
Seconded.
All those in favor?
Aye.
I believe I should abstain since I wasn't here.
Okay, so you were here.
That's okay.
And welcome.
Thank you for having me.
We're glad to have you back.
It's an honor, appreciate it.
Public hearing, ratification of a public hearing.
Yes, ma'am, thank you. So we have known for some time, because we've been going through the process along with the county, that we were in the cycle to have our FEMA floodplain maps updated. So we worked with the county and they helped us a lot in terms of the notification and getting the mapping out there because they put it on the county GIS. And we didn't have a tremendous amount of change in the town. But what I didn't realize until just a few weeks ago is that concurrent with this round of FEMA floodplain map changes, there was an expectation that you were going to change your floodplain ordinance. And what this is coming from, of course, the flood insurance is a federal program. This is really, we have to put things in our ordinance, but this is a federal program, it is federal money. And in order to participate as a community, you have to have an ordinance that complies with the federal standards. So the feds are really doing a lot of things to tighten up the ordinance, and it comes down to the fact that, as you all know, many of the disasters that have happened nationally, you have folks that are rebuilding in flood-prone areas, and they're really trying to limit some of those kinds of issues and do more to have people, when they do build in higher-risk areas, to make those structures safer. So I ended up needing to get all of this in for a public hearing for you all and for the council so that this could be adopted by February 14th. Doing that ensures that no one in town who has flood insurance has any lapse in coverage. So I'm not sure if I missed the notification or if DCR, which is the state agency that's been coordinating this for FEMA, I don't know if we were just kind of at the tail end of their list, so I got it late, but I got it about 3 weeks ago. Vicki, thank goodness, was able to get us properly advertised. So the first thing I need to do is get a motion from the Planning Commission to ratify my setting and advertising of the public hearing since you didn't set it at your last meeting.
Yeah, so moved.
Should I have a second?
I'll second.
I think.
Didn't make any difference.
Okay, all those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Thank you. So the ordinance is before you. There really isn't anything in here other than what we're required to do for FEMA. So it is presented to you as an underlined strikeout version so that you can see what was changed. Like I said, there is substantially more detail in some parts of it, particularly related to things that are administrative in terms of variances and people's kind of vested rights. So I'm happy to answer any questions. It has been reviewed by our attorney, and it has been sent off for final approval by FEMA as well. And I do have this scheduled for a public hearing with the council next week so that we can meet that deadline.
How much property do you have in the town that's in the floodplain?
Very few. So we have, and the ones that we had changes on through this last cycle were really much more around like Rutledge Creek. Interestingly enough, like some of the other creek sections, like Williams and Tribulation, really did not show very much substantial change at all. But the one that did show increased flooding around it was Rutledge. So where you saw the change was down by where the town park is, where the mill is, and all along that section of Rutledge coming towards wastewater. We had a very minor change at wastewater, but those, it was about 7 properties that changed significantly in town. Most of them do not have structures on them. The mill is obviously the most heavily impacted structure.
Was that more or less caused by the new bypass, or was that
So there would have been a...
Because it was in the floodplain before the bypass.
Right, and there has been a map update since the bypass, so I don't, you know, one of the things we always hear is that their mapping gets better over time. So as they get more and more information, and as the topography layers get more and more refined, their mapping gets better. So we do know that that's true, just part of it changes because they're getting more and more data over time. They also say anytime you have development, that as development occurs, you are changing the natural path of water, and so you end up with some of that. But some of it just is more rain events or the changing landscape. Water changes the landscape. So, yeah, it is interesting, though. That was really the only spot. I was looking for more areas to be impacted with some of the other creeks through town, but it really was just Rutledge.
But did you also, excuse me if I may ask, did you also say that there were changes at the town park, water area, and the mill? Those were some significant changes?
Yes, okay. So the more significant changes occurred. So if you think about the section of Rutledge that kind of starts there at Old Mill Park.
Right.
And then runs under the bypass and then goes over to the mill, mm-hmm. and then comes back out through town and then ends at wastewater in terms of the town side. We did have changes on that section of Rutledge.
Okay.
And so the town had two properties that were affected, the park and then the wastewater treatment plant. We've always been a little bit concerned about what we refer to at wastewater as the lower plant.
Right.
Because there's a part that's up on the hill and then there's a part that's on the lower side. It did not impact any of our structures, it impacted our property. So we were glad about that.
Just what? FYI, why do we have September the 12th on this date on this?
Because
this is the first page of the ordinance of the town of Amherst in a regular meeting, September the 12th, 2020.
I'm not sure what you're looking at.
Right.
What are you looking at?
I don't want it to be September before it gets...
Page 1 is 21.
First page?
Because it should have been April.
Okay, I just saw that and I thought maybe we need
Thank you,
to...
I'll fix that before the council meeting.
Okay.
Yeah. So Sarah, what are we meant to do with this? Obviously, we can't digest this here. You have gone through it. What do you need from the Planning Commission?
Just a recommendation to send this forward to council. I mean, this is really one of those things that you don't have any choice about if you want people to be able to get flood insurance in town. I mean, it is a thing that we have to adopt into our code to enable people to participate in flood insurance.
Okay. I
noticed throughout here it looks like any construction, any future construction is to be built at least 1 foot higher than the current. Okay, that's a change there too.
It is a change.
So whatever the level is, it's got to be at least a foot higher, which I think is a good idea.
Right. So it used to essentially be you had to be out of the flood elevation.
Mm-hmm.
So if the flood elevation was 14,
mm-hmm.
you could, as long as you were over 14, you were
right.
good. And so what that meant from a lot of people's perspective, from a construction perspective, is you would either see kind of the beach house construction
yeah.
where you would put something on piers,
right.
or alternatively, you could actually raise your land itself. So
mm-hmm.
you could have, you could put in, fill to
right.
get up above that amount.
Okay.
And one of the reasons FEMA has done this is because, again, they have seen adjacent to a lot of creeks and so forth with development that what is at level now, somebody does an inch above that 14,
right.
and then 10 years later, they're now
and,
in the, right.
Yeah.
So that's part of what they're doing. So
okay.
you're right,
they
that is a change.
Which is good. I mean, yeah.
So the Rutledge is really the only floodplain we have, the Rutledge Creek area?
No, there are other floodplains, but that's really the only significant changes in town
so,
were around Rutledge.
Do you know where the others are?
So they do it. You do have some floodplains around, like around Williams or around Tribulation, around other creeks that are in town. But
okay.
Rutledge is the largest of them. There's a lot of volume change in Rutledge when it rains heavy, and if you look at a lot of the other creeks in town, you don't have that same level of volume change.
Do I have a motion?
Could I Y'all can correct me. I don't think we opened the public hearing.
I think you're right.
I don't think we did, and to back up, that ordinance will be dated February as well.
February?
February, for this month.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah.
So we did not open the public hearing? So you need me to open the public hearing and close the public hearing? So we'll open the public hearing on the ordinance of the floodplain. Any comments from the public? All right, we'll close the public hearing on the floodplain. So now we can have a motion to accept the changes.
I think we made a motion at that.
You make the motion?
So I'll move.
Okay, second?
I'll second it.
All right, all those in favor?
Aye.
Okay.
Thank you. Next up is your annual exercise in reviewing the capital improvement program. I am happy about, you will notice particularly this year, I think that things are moving and progressing through the program. We first started doing a capital improvement program in this fashion probably about 6 years ago. And it really took a while to get everyone accommodated to the idea that this is a 5-year cycle and you need to put things on as they're coming up instead of having them show up and I need this next year kind of thing. And so there's a lot more predictability in this now and there's not a great level of change. Most of the staff meeting where we got together and talked about the capital improvement this time, really were things just moving up in year for the next thing. So I'm happy to answer any questions. You did have a memo from Mrs. Morgan on it, and then you have your nice actual spreadsheet. So, and then at the end of any discussion or questions or comments on this, I'll ask you to set a public hearing for next month.
Any questions?
Well, I will say I'm a believer that we definitely need to work with maintenance. I'm glad that we've had repairs done to the actual building, and it'll be nice to see if we can get a metal structure, you know, to continue that. Resealing the town hall lot. I'm jumping around here. Is that okay?
That's fine.
That, I mean, I assume that's what we need. That won't be it for another year or so. It'll be here before you know it. I'm always interested in water line replacements. That's very important to our infrastructure. The plants, you know, you've heard in the past the problems that Richmond had with their water. I mean, again, that's infrastructure. The police, you know, I think the world of our guys, and I believe if they need new items, we should do that. Now, this, the Ford Interceptor, and maybe I need to be refreshed with this, but I believe that one time we were starting it that we didn't want to have a cluster of cars at one time. We tried to get one every now, not have it bundled so much. And I'll never forget saying, well, what? They don't need a new car. There's only 20,000 miles on it, hypothetically. But I learned that those vehicles run the whole time. You don't stop. It's not just the wheel mileage, for my lack of terms, but it's the startup. And those are machines, so I get that. The one question I have, and I'm not sure who to direct this to, whether it's Ms. Driscoll, Ms. McGuffin, but the town pool car, $35,000, that's a lot of money. And I don't know if there are any receipts. Have there been any repairs done, and do we have receipts to go with it?
So the reason this got put in, and you'll notice, I mean, this is a new addition that is showing up this year. And what that came from is actually from a council member, which is why it has shown up. And even though it's the first year, it's showing up in the first year. The town hall folks and any council members who use a vehicle to go to a conference use the Explorer that's out in the parking lot that's there now. Mr. Watts at a council meeting brought up the fact that he felt like that car was not good. it leaks. We have tried very hard to find why it leaks. I mean, on a warm day, the windows get steamed up. I mean, we just keep driving it. Staff is just gonna keep driving the car until the wheels fall off of it, but I think Mr. Watts was like, this car is ridiculous, it's probably growing mold in there. It's really, he's like, I drove that car and I got an infection. It's like, it's disgusting.
What year is it?
The problem is, it's not even the age or the mileage. It was the police chief's car when Robert Kimber was here. And there was a decision made, this is before I got here, there was a decision made to have that car not be a police car. And it's not a police model car. That's one of the things, we moved away from having basic Explorers be police cars, because you really shouldn't, they're not built correctly. So it's not a police car, but when you put police equipment in a car that wasn't made for it, they drill all kinds of holes in the car. And even though we have gone through and resealed and had new, you know, weather stripping and all kinds of stuff put in it, the car still leaks somewhere. And so anyway, and it has lights flashing when you drive it. Like I said, staff is gonna keep driving a car until the wheels fall off.
I love that vehicle, I've been in it. It's a little machine. And I love, if you're gonna sell it, I want a first refusal, because I could do some damage, you know.
When I was still driving, I drove that car home in the snow one time, and I lived on a very hilly road in Appomattox, and that car does great.
You had
snow.
No problems, I'm sure.
Yeah.
But all joking aside, if we were to consider that, I would like to, I don't know if you want me to discuss it now, but first of all, before we get rid of it, I'd like to have someone look at it. You know, I had water dripping through my vehicle, and they were able to plug it, if you will. Seal it. So I think before we do something like that, and then do we just continue to discuss it now, or just wait until later with my other thoughts? Should we?
I had a question about the car too.
Okay.
What would be the advantage of buying a new one over renting a car when it was needed?
One of the biggest reasons is the town hall car gets a lot of use at the last minute. It really does. I mean, like, obviously, if we're planning to go to a conference or something like that, you can plan that in advance. But there's also a lot of times that it is used for, a car needs to be repaired for maintenance or the police, and they'll take that to be able to, you know, ferry cars back and forth. It gets a lot of kind of random use, it really does. I wouldn't want to see us have a rental for that car just for that reason. It's been very helpful having that vehicle.
What did the town do before this vehicle?
Before this vehicle, the police chief's car before that one was at town hall. And that was Ken Watts' Blue Explorer, which now lives down at maintenance. So, you know, we typically don't get rid of cars for a while. And like I said, this one was not a staff request. This one came from a council member. So there it is. And, you know, folks can...
I'm not interested in that at this time. I think we could use that money elsewhere, because I mean, I understand we have town business to take care of, but how much outside of that is technically town business?
I think it's an awful lot of money.
Does that make sense?
I suspect that Mrs. Morgan will not put it in the budget, is what I suspect is going to happen, because as she's writing the budget, it shows up on the CIP. I'm not sure she's going to budget any money for it. I think the only, as you can see, the capital improvement column for this year is pretty vacant, which was by design. We did a lot of big projects last year. So this was really an intentional thing to not put a lot of things in this budget year coming up, with really just the tasers as an issue that we know we need to address. So.
And the main part, the main issue with the tasers is the fact that they can't be repaired any longer?
They are, the ones that we have are obsolete, and you cannot, they're no longer backed up by the company. It's not a good, and I would love to say that the next time we buy tasers, we're gonna get something different and we won't have this problem. But there is just no guarantee, because I really think that this is how these companies make their money.
Just like cell phones.
Right, they, it's kind, there's kind of designed obsolescence in a lot of these things where you buy these things and it's on a cycle and at some point.
They don't service it anymore,
you can't get parts for it anymore, and, you know, so the chief has said, right now, we have an operational, you know, set of tasers, you know, we're using what we have for as long as we can, and, you know we're gonna have to deal with this.
And so the idea is to put them into rotation after this, is that?
So what he would like to do is he wants to get the ones he needs for the full-time officers and then annually add one for part-timers after that is how he has broken up the cost of this.
So you're adding and not replacing, so you're gonna end up in X number of years and have to replace them all again.
But there is actually a design behind that. So a lot of police equipment, we do replace all at once so that all the equipment is standard between the officers. So the intention with that, whether it's guns or tasers or body cams or anything that they use, is that any officer can get into any car or use any other person's equipment. So where police equipment is concerned, whatever it is we're getting that year, if it's tasers, we do try to get the bulk of them in 1 year, so all the full-time officers have the same thing.
Right.
And then, you know, when they need laptops, we try to do that in a different year than we do the tasers. But that is one kind of equipment that we do tend to buy them all at one time, just so that we keep the uniformity. We used to not do that, and we really did at one point end up having to deal with several things that were kind of in varying states of compliance. And it was a problem for accreditation, but also just for officers, if something happened to a piece of equipment, you'd end up being handed one that was completely different than what you had been using.
Okay.
Yeah, the operation of something's different. Mm-hmm. You don't have time to think about how that, it was orange button yesterday and that was the
right,
red button today.
It just doesn't work, yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Ms. Wheat, did you have something else you
wanted? No, I didn't. You have?
Right. So, kind of very similar is the in-car cameras, body cameras that are here. So what we've got right now looks like it's no longer serviceable, or is there a requirement that our police force wear these and have them operational?
So not from a state point of view, from our town policy point of view, it is.
It is. Okay.
So we require it, but the state does not mandate that.
Okay.
So, and there are still police forces, state troopers don't wear body cameras. So the state has not gone down there, that road. And then even some of your largest jurisdictions have made a strategic decision not to wear body cameras. And the interesting thing is when you talk to them about why that is, what they will tell you is that they don't want to have to manage the volume of data, and they don't want to have to deal with the information requests for that data.
Yeah.
They never say, we think it's bad for our officers, mm-hmm. or we think it's bad for the citizens. It comes down to an operational issue with the data. I know in Chesterfield County, when Chesterfield instituted body cameras, the Commonwealth's Attorney's Office added like 5 or 6 new attorneys just to deal with the voluminous nature of all the body camera footage that was coming out of traffic stops and crime scenes and everything else. So it really can be a lot of data and information, but you know, I'm a huge fan of those body cameras. We have had people who have made complaints on an officer. And
the body camera,
and
sure.
Then you literally just
yeah.
pull up that body cam footage and you just mm-hmm. sit there with the person and let them view that footage.
Yeah. And it's over.
Right.
What's the nature
of the complaint you'd like to make?
Yes, exactly. I would think that AI is going to make a change.
I bet it will.
In that it's possible in seconds to evaluate footage, you know, data.
That's a great point.
I'm definitely in favor.
it, one of the things that has changed a lot on the cameras and just the data side of it is the data portion of managing what we used to have to do to keep these up. I mean,
It was huge. It was
a rigmarole at the end of every shift, you know, taking your camera, getting the drive, putting it in the master computer, downloading the information, wiping the drive, putting it back in your, and see, all of this stuff is all cloud-enabled now, and the new systems between car and body cam are all connected now, so you turn your car camera on, or when your lights go on, your car camera comes on, and then when you get out of the car, it automatically switches to your body camera. It's all of that stuff is getting much, much better and more uniform, but that's an interesting concept about AI helping with actually viewing the data, because I think you're right about that.
Yeah.
Back, I think it was a year ago, I mean, if you walked around the streets of London in a day, you could expect to be photographed 300 times.
Hmm. That's the most photographed city in the world.
Yep. Anyway, interesting. Sorry.
Any other questions? Any other comments? Okay, so we need to set a public hearing for next month on the... Do I have a motion to set a public hearing on the capital improvement program for our March meeting?
I make that motion.
Okay, second?
I'll second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Okay, we'll set the public hearing for next month. And we need to set a public hearing for rezoning of 305 Sunset. Would you like to explain that?
Yes, ma'am. So as you head down Sunset and you are heading kind of at the end of town on the left-hand side, you come to a portion of town, and actually we have some that is between Sunset and Wasbury as well, that is remains zoned agriculture. And so I got a contact from Chase Crowder, who's a local surveyor, and he's working with a client who would like to buy all of the kind of farm acreage that's associated with 305 Sunset, and the person who owns that property would like to sell it to him, but wants to retain her home. In order to retain her home without a rezoning, she would have to have a very large parcel of land. She doesn't want it. She just wants her yard. This is, I mean, she really just wants to have like a rational single-family sized yard. So what this request is to rezone that portion of the property from A1 to R1, which is consistent with what the rest of Sunset is. The house, one house over, is zoned R1. And so this is just a rezoning for essentially the house lot that would go with that. The remainder would stay R1 and would be purchased by the family that lives next door.
Do you know what the difference is?
It's the Motleys own the property next door, and Paul Motley is the person who is purchasing the property, and Sandra Brown is the owner of 305 Sunset.
Do you know what the dimensions of the lot were going to be?
Yes, ma'am. I have.
Did you say Alex or?
No, it's Paul Motley. Oh. Alex has moved to
LS.
Yeah, somewhere in Nebraska. I don't know, someplace far, far away. I can show you these. We can. I don't think I have a number, but you can see this.
Share.
This is the dimensions.
Minutes that was sent out.
Oh, I didn't see.
I thought so. I thought I included. So this new lot that would be 15A meets the requirements of the code, and I'm looking to see where he has this parcel table, 0.768 of an acre. So 3/4 of an acre for this lot.
So resident lot number 15, who owns that? This one.
That's Sandra Brown. So all of this is owned by Sandra Brown
now. Even here?
And 14? Then I believe... This one, the Motley's right here. I'm not sure if this one.
Okay,
so she owns
this part.
15,
okay.
And wants to retain what would be new 15A.
She'll keep this for
and
this,
this,
and this will
be sold to the adjacent property owner.
To the Motley's.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, I don't see any problem with that.
No, this is a pretty straightforward request. Mm-hmm. That's Dave. So, and I can make more copies of that.
That's fine. I saw the one online, so that's...
So that is that request, and we would just need to have a public hearing set for next month in order to do the rezoning. I'm also requesting that the council set a public hearing for next month, and in my mind, this is a pretty straightforward, I don't see any issues with it kind of request. So my intention is to double advertise this for the planning commission and the council, and then have it completed after the council meeting next month.
So can I have a motion to set the public hearing for the rezoning of 305 Sunset Drive?
So moved.
Second? All those in favor?
Aye.
Okay, thank you. Concerned with commissioners? None?
My son's working in AI, so...
He can figure out how to make that work for us.
He knows it's happening.
All right, then do I have a motion for adjournment?
I have a motion.
Second?
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Meeting adjourned.
That happened.
That was a breakfast setting meeting right there.